You're listening to Resolution Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. We must change our societies if we are to survive, and change them radically. We must also change our view of who we are and why we are here. These are hard changes. We must have a will of steel and an absolute spiritual certainty that we must and we will survive, or all is lost. Revelo P. Oliver, one of the greats of the 20th century, inspires us to see the world and see our lives anew, as they really are. In his 1968 speech, What We Owe Our Parasites. Today, we present the concluding part of that uniquely significant speech. The following are the words of Revelo Pendleton Oliver. Listen.
All of these factors have contributed, I think, to our strange toleration of the do-gooder and our incredible obtuseness in never asking against whom he is doing good. For it is unfortunately true that fully 80% of all those high-sounding projects of uplift and social justice are motivated not by concern for the supposed beneficiaries, but by greed or malice. But we never ask. That is why we have so many intellectuals battening upon us. They have discovered the safest and most profitable of all rackets. An intellectual is distinguished by two talents, a glib proficiency with words and very sensitive nostrils. He can smell a $20 bill in your pocket a block away. And within 2 minutes after that delicious aroma reaches his nostrils, the ideals are drooling down his jaw. You know the jargon. The underprivileged, equality of opportunity, the culturally deprived, underdeveloped nations, emerging peoples, and the like. Ad infinitum nauseam. And as you listen to his sing-song, the chances are you won't even notice his hand as it goes into your pocket. Now, we may be rich enough to be suckers, but we cannot afford the more elaborate kinds of do-gooding that are inspired by malice and hatred. But yet we tolerate them with a collective masochism that is simply suicidal. We have accepted an incredible inversion of values to the point that we have declared ourselves to be an inferior species, fit only to be enslaved, beaten, and butchered at the whim of our betters. That is what the proposition amounts to. Although, of course, it is daubed over with the viscid slobber of humanitarian drivel, devised by our enemies and mindlessly multiplied by our own sniveling sentimentalists. It is not a new thing. If I had time, I would direct your attention in some detail to the vast and irreparable calamity brought upon our nation in the last century by a tiny group of vociferous and crazed fanatics, the abolitionists, who forced upon the South its tragic war for independence. I am not defending slavery, Negro slavery, as an institution. I believe that Jefferson and Lincoln were right in regarding it as a system that was pernicious for quite rational reasons, of which the most important were, first, that it maintained on our soil millions of persons of a race radically different from our own and, by our standards, inferior. And second, that it resulted in some production of mongrels, pitiable creatures torn apart by the incompatible instincts they had inherited. As you know, it was the firm purpose of Abraham Lincoln to have all the Negroes either returned to Africa or, in the interests of economy, sent to Central America. But the abolitionists were not rational. They were, I am sorry to say, most of them Americans, including such persons as Wendell Phillips, Professor Eleazar Wright, and, of course, hysterical females, such as Lydia Child and Harriet Beecher Stowe. Their leader was William Lloyd Garrison, who was an American, too, although he was financed by Isaac Knapp and other Jews. They were a tiny group, despised by sane Americans north and south, but they ranted and raved until they got their way. They began to agitate in 1840 for dissolution of the American Union and for division of the United States by secession into two countries. And after 20 years of ranting, they finally persuaded the states of the South to take their proposal seriously. It is most instructive to read the abolitionists. They spout quotations from the Bible, and they babble about human rights and equality. But they cannot completely conceal their real animus and inspiration. Their venom is directed against the plantation owners of the South, most of whom, by no means all, were ladies and gentlemen. The abolitionists have in their minds a picture, partly correct, of the Southern landowner as a man far superior to themselves in education, culture, and humanity. And for that, they hated him implacably. They also had in their feverish minds a picture, totally false, of the planter as a man of unbounded wealth and leisure, who spent his life lolling on a wide veranda and sipping mint juleps. And they envied him passionately. They had a picture equally false of the Southern lady as one who spent her days in fairy-like ease, waited on hand and foot by obsequious slaves. And a picture largely correct of those women as being accorded by men a chivalrous respect that was almost unknown in the North. And so they yearned to humiliate and destroy that Southern lady. That was the real inspiration of their frantic do-gooding. You can take the true measure of what has happened to our national mentality by just remembering the name of that distinguished horse thief and homicidal maniac, John Brown, who, financed by a conspiratorial group that called themselves the Secret Six, was sent into the South to start a slave revolt. As everyone admits, his purpose was to get all the white women of the South raped and butchered, and to get all the white men of the South barbarously mutilated and butchered. And what does that make of him in contemporary opinion? Why, he was a champion of human rights, a martyr of freedom, and all that. He wanted to butcher, it's true, but to butcher white men and women. That's to say, white swine like ourselves, as we wallow in ecstasies of self-abasement and self-hatred. And that suffices to make him admirable, to make him noble. And so his soul goes marching on. Over the hot coals, I hope. I remind you that that little body of howling dervishes brought on us a terribly fratricidal war, inflicting on us an irreparable loss and impoverishing our nation and race forever by destroying the genetic heritage of our best men. And it also coarsened us morally, perhaps also irreparably. For after the assassination of Lincoln, which they certainly contrived, our hate-crazed do-gooders had their way. If there is any American who can read the history of all the suffering wantonly inflicted on the white people of the South during what is called Reconstruction, who can read that without hanging his head in shame and feeling through his whole being an anguished remorse, I can only say that he is hard-hearted and sadistic beyond my understanding. With that beginning, is it any wonder that we have reached today the point at which frenzied hatred of us is the certain way of attaining our veneration and our reverence? How the Americans have been taught to hate themselves. Chinese communists attack and capture one of our naval vessels, which we, perhaps by agreement between them and our enemies in Washington, refused to defend, although we had ample warning of the attack. But who cares? They're just white swine like us, born to work and die for their master's pleasure. Now, of course, if they had been something really choice and noble, such as a mongrel, syphilitic, lousy, homosexual, communist, cannibal, why, all of our liberal punks would be out screaming and howling in our streets from dawn to dusk and all night. Every day, more and more of our young men are shipped to Vietnam and forced to fight under conditions carefully contrived to ensure the maximum loss of American lives and to ensure eventual defeat. But let us overlook that. Let us assume that it really is a war and that it's being honestly fought. What is its professed purpose? To secure a naval or air base for the United States? To conquer a colony for the United States? To protect our blood brothers in Australia? Those would be rational purposes, although one might debate the strategic necessity of that particular location. No, the ostensible purpose, the declared purpose, is to save the prolific Orientals of South Vietnam from the horrors of communism. Never mind that that purpose is transparent hypocrisy. Assume that it is sincere. What then? We are Americans, white men of the West, and if we were sane, no truth would be more obvious and unquestionable to us than the fact that, so far as we are concerned, all the teeming population of Vietnam is not worth the life of one American soldier. But if anyone suggests that, why, everyone is horrified. Are we not the world's slaves to be used for do-goody? Who cares about your son and mine? They're expendable. Now, at the instigation of the promoters of that slaughter in Vietnam, for political purposes, hordes of young punks come screaming from the doors of our hoodlum hatcheries, which for some reason are still called colleges, and they protest the awful war in Vietnam. What are they protesting? The useless death of a brother? Of a former classmate? A white man? No. They are yowling and yammering because some of the sweet Orientals in North Vietnam get hurt sometimes. If only we could find some plausible way of killing American boys without discomfort to the Orientals, those rabid protesters would be perfectly happy. The Jews, who, as I have said, are a highly intelligent people, and who, with perhaps 5% of our military resources, knew how to finish in 6 days a war against opponents far more numerous and formidable than the Japanese, and who were intelligent enough to know that the only justification for aggressive war is the territory that is conquered by it. They decided that it'd be fun to kill some despised goyim on our ship, the Liberty, and they did so, with the result that the legislature of at least one American state rushed them an official message of congratulation. Our men were killed where we sent them, ostensibly in the service of our country, killed while wearing our uniform and flying our flag. They were the symbols of our nation. They would have been the visible embodiment of our self-respect if we had any, but who cares? They're just white swine like us. Down in Memphis, somebody shoots a black automobile thief, noted communist agent, and bloodthirsty inciter of riots and revolution against us. Happens. Half the white nitwits in this country stivel and sob and mourn, saying tearfully, "What a wonderful man he was. He wanted to kill white swine like us. Wasn't that sweet? Wasn't that noble? Wasn't that saintly? Wasn't he just like Jesus?" No one could go on for hours listing more examples, but I have said enough surely to show you what is really the greatest single obstacle that we face: the perverted collective masochism that has been incited in so many of our people. What I have been saying just now is not what I first intended to say to you. I meditated and prepared a discourse that was intended to show you that we have passed the point of no return, and that we now face a future of violence that can result only in our total subjection to the status of livestock, our survival at the cost of great hardships, sacrifice, and loss of life. I intended to speak at some length about Francis Parker Yockey and his great book, Imperium. It is a book which evidently has the power to give to sound and healthy young Americans an inspiration and a purpose. And I intended to comment on it as representing probably our only force that will help us emerge from our present plight. But after that, I had two telephone calls from men whose names you would probably recognize. Patriotic movements in this country include some phonies and a number of double agents whose mission it is to see to it that all patriotic endeavors are directed down blind alleys where they must end in frustration and discouragement. But I feel sure that neither man who called me belonged to either of those groups. I feel convinced that they were sincere and earnest. One of them spoke to me very solemnly about our duty to protect and defend the people of Vietnam from the horrors of communism. The others, in the course of the conversation, spoke very emphatically about our duty to give to the rest of the world an inspiring example of the blessings of free enterprise. To the rest of the world, mind you, we are obliged to give them a model that they can follow. So I discarded the discourse that I had prepared and substituted this discussion, which has already been both too long and too cursory. For I am convinced that we shall never be able to think rationally about our own survival until we have the courage to say, in our own minds, to say, we are Americans, white men of the West. This is our country because we took it from the Indians. And we have an unquestionable right to this country so long as we have the power and will to defend it. What do we owe the nations of Western Europe and to such nations as Australia and South Africa? We owe them recognition of our blood relationship to the men of our race who remained in the lands from which we came, and with whom we have, to the extent that they recognize it, a common interest, since we and they together form a race that is numerically a minority on this globe, the rest of whose inhabitants hate us. What do we owe the rest of the world? Nothing. Absolutely. What are the civil rights that we owe our Negroes if they insist on having them? A free ride to Africa. What do we owe the self-chosen people? Ordinary courtesy and considerate treatment, so long as we are convinced that it is to our advantage to have a cohesive body of 12 to 15 million aliens reside in our country and own a large part of it. What do we owe to the unspeakable gang that now rules us in Washington? A fair trial. Now, all this, of course, is something that we can say only in our own minds and in closed meetings. And it is probably rash to say it even in such assemblies as this. Given the strange infatuation of the majority of our people, to which I have called your attention as being the greatest single obstacle before us, such statements are obviously not feasible as propaganda or proclamations. Indeed, I greatly fear that for most of our people, those implanted humanitarian hallucinations are so deep and inveterate that they can be broken, if at all, oddly by the terrible shock of physical suffering, and that they will surely receive. In the meantime, it will fall to you, if you do not intend to surrender, to provide such leadership in your own circles and communities, and to make such preparations and take such actions as will advance our cause with due consideration to prudence and strategy. I have said this to you because I am firmly convinced that our future is hopeless indeed if we do not clearly see in our own minds our own purposes. And that, I am certain, we can never do unless we can free our own minds from the constricting trammels of humanitarian superstitions and the counterfeit moral inhibitions that have replaced true morality. I trust that I have not shocked any of you, but I know that it is quite possible that some of you may feel that what I have said is heartless and in violation of our Christian duty to love everyone. If so, I can only say that I am sorry and observe that you are much too good for this world. I know that the prospect that I have suggested is grim and may well daunt a man. I can only remind you of the most incontrovertibly true statement in the great and prophetic work of Oswald Spengler. Glücklich wird niemand sein, der heute irgendwo in der Welt lebt. From that destiny there is no retreat, no escape. There is no place to hide from the consequences of what we, the West, have brought on ourselves by our generous folly. The only alternatives now are to fight or to whimper. But if you think you can escape, goodbye and good luck. To the rest of you, I suggest that we shall see our problem clearly when we say to ourselves, we are Americans. This is our country. He who would take it from us by force or by stealth is our enemy. And it is our purpose, nay, it is our duty to our children and to their children, and to our yet unborn posterity. It is our duty to use all feasible means to destroy him.
You have been listening to the concluding part of Dr. Revelo P. Oliver's historic 1968 speech, What We Owe Our Parasites. Dr. Oliver, a classical scholar and one of the greatest American writers of our time, had been one of the leaders of the conservative movement in the United States. He was a leading writer for the American Mercury, National Review, and American Opinion magazines. But Dr. Oliver realized far earlier than almost all of his contemporaries that the conservative movement was being subverted and taken over from within and converted into yet another weapon of our deadliest enemies. Within months of making this speech, Dr. Oliver and his associates, Lewis Byers and Dr. William Pierce, the founder of this radio program, were to create the National Alliance. If you have been inspired by Dr. Oliver's words today, if there still stirs in you the Faustian spirit of European man, I invite you to join our alliance. I'll see you next time, right here, on American Dissident Voices.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.